Welcome to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Join Jaguars General Manager Gene Smith and your host Cole Pepper as they break down the last Jaguars game and look at the next time the Jaguars take the field. We'll also take a dip inside the Gene Pool to see what makes a player stand out at his position. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. He is brought to you by Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, Wells Fargo, Sonny's Barbecue, your local Jacksonville Teal Deals merchants, and by Everbank. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith begins right now.
And we welcome you in. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith following the Jaguars 20-13 loss to the Houston Texans yesterday. Jaguars fall to 3-8 on the season. And we have a lot to talk about. Of course, always a lot to talk about on a Monday, but especially when you see the quarterback get pulled from the game, and a game that was another frustrating loss for the Jaguars for sure at home. And Gene, a tough one to return home after a month to have it end that way.
It certainly is. It was a winnable game. They had some trying situations themselves these last couple weeks. So when you get to this point in the season, everybody's going through some of the same things, and you got to find a way to persevere through it. And even if you got to win ugly, and we weren't able to do that yesterday.
Well, we'll talk about some of the positives that came out of yesterday's game, some of the issues that cropped up as well, and try to look forward a bit. Also, we'll be taking your tweets. You can tweet to us here if you want to get your pick for the Scout's Eye Unsung Player of the Game. And again, to give you kind of the reset of what that is, not necessarily the guy who made the highlight play, not the guy who may have been the offensive or defensive or special teams player of the game, but the guy who played well enough to catch the Scout's Eye. And we'll see if you had that Scout's Eye out there. I thought this was an easy pick this week. And I said that before I told you in the break here, and I'm on it, so I like this one. I told Joe about an hour and a half ago I was on this one. I thought this was an easy pick this week for that. But let's get into what happened yesterday. And I want to start with the defense. Five starters out of the lineup, and the defense still did a terrific job against, granted, a backup than a third-string quarterback. But you hold Houston to 215 yards, 88 yards rushing, and you take away one long run by Arian Foster, and it looks even more impressive.
No question, seventh in total offense, and they had been rushing 458 yards a game coming in. So I believe their average per carry was like 2.8, which is really outstanding for our defensive front. I thought that's one area where we won in the trenches, at least our defensive line against their offensive line.
Yeah, and if you can win the trenches on both sides, game in and game out, you're going to be in pretty good shape regardless of what happens the rest of the way. And you get a scoop and a score, something that Mel Tucker's been talking about as a big focus, the scoop and score. Paul Posluszny forced the fumble, and Ashton Yeboah, who you just signed a couple weeks ago, scooped it up and ran in for the defensive score.
It was an outstanding play. Ashton, here's a guy in 2 weeks, doesn't have a lot of time on task here, not in playing shape per se, being the fact he hasn't been in organized football since training camp. I have to take my hat off to how he's performed. He led us in tackles, coming up in run support, at the point of attack, and on some cutback things. Actually, Will Middleton did that as well, so both corners did a nice job in the run game of being physical. And then our linebackers, Cole, played downhill, and that's what you got to do against the reach and run zone running game, because that's one of the ways you can attack that scheme and have some success.
Maybe this is as good a time as any to ask you your perspective on the kind of job Mel Tucker has done with that defense this year. With all the new faces, all the new bodies, and with so far to go statistically from last year to be now fourth in the league in defense, I think maybe like 3 or 4 tenths of a yard from being third in the National Football League defensively, quite a turnaround.
It most certainly is, especially the way our offense has struggled. Our special teams hasn't been up to par. He has held that group together. They make no excuses. They got a lot of problem solvers over there. What you said earlier, you know, some guys who were role players that had to step into more prominent roles as starters the last couple weeks. They come in with the same mindset as the other starters, that they're coming in to not let their teammates down, to play with a lot of pride in what they've established defensively thus far in the 2011 season. And so what Mel and the entire coaching staff has done defensively is really a tremendous job with when we got some of these players and how they've meshed in the level they're performing at.
I've heard you use the phrase problem solvers a couple of times when talking about some of the coaches on that side who have dealt with some injuries and so forth, but they've been able to find ways to keep it going.
No question. When you get into a season, and I've said this before, I mean, you can't complain about what you don't have. You have to improve what you do have. And I just feel like in the NFL, I mean, you're going to have injuries with the length of the season. And so everybody's going through some of the same problems. And you got to find a way, again, to persevere through those problems. And, you know, that's the one thing I can tell you about this group of players. There's no finger pointing. There's guys working to get better. And, you know, when you see that in a football team with some of the trying times we've had, it's a very positive thing to be around.
All right, also, Maurice Jones-Drew went over 1,000 yards for the season. Third straight year he's done that. He's second in the National Football League in rushing. Kind of a broken record week in and week out. We say, boy, what a game Maurice had.
Well, I think you need to recognize him off this game. It was a tremendous performance. I go back to running the ball, okay, setting the tempo really for our offense each week, blocking and catching. He's versatile. He's a complete back. He's 10 yards behind LeSean McCoy from Philadelphia for leading the league in rushing.
Yeah, and there was, because Philly played late game or later, the afternoon game against New England, there was a point there where for, I don't know, 45 minutes or an hour, Maurice was a leading rusher in the NFL, and I have a feeling that if things keep going, you know, he'll have a chance to potentially wind up being a leading rusher in the National Football League. I know he's not a big statistics guy, despite being a big fantasy football guy, but to lead the league in rushing is a pretty special thing, and he certainly has the ability to do that.
No question. I feel like, you know, he sustained his level of play. When you look at yesterday, 18 touches and a 5.5-yard average per carry, the Houston defense is number one in the league. Mm-hmm. I feel like he's been the one bright spot the entire year.
All right, let's also tip our cap to Brad Meester, who broke Jimmy Smith's Jaguars record for total games played. And I was joking with him after the game that, you know, his chance of being a deep threat receiver went by the wayside when he dropped a deflected pass. But, I mean, here's a guy who has been, I think, as about as steady as you can imagine. You talk about a guy over the course of a career to be as steady as he's been. Meester has certainly been that almost since the beginning.
Well, steady is a great word. And by the way, that play that he broke up was a big play in the game. It could have been intercepted. Brad had a challenge yesterday because, you know, when you play an odd front, you got a guy right on your nose as you're snapping the ball. And I thought Brad throughout the game, I mean, he might have had a couple plays where the defensive lineman was able to get the best of him, but I thought through the course of the entire game, he held his own and did some outstanding things.
And finally, in terms of the positive standpoint, Cecil Shorts gets his first NFL catch. It's been a long time coming, and a guy who, when we saw in training camp, a lot of us said, boy, this guy really has something there, but hasn't been able to connect and finally got his first NFL catch.
I think it was a bright spot for him. He's fought through some things. He had some soft tissue things during the last month that he's tried to play through and then wasn't able to. If you look back to the preseason, him and Mike Thomas were our two leading receivers. We saw a lot of what he could do in the early stages of training camp and practice, and hopefully we'll see more of that here yet this season.
All right. Certainly we'll talk about the quarterback situation. We'll talk about the pass protection, as well as if the Jaguars will get a boost here in the rest of the season. We'll see what happens as far as that's concerned. Plus, we'll name the Scouts Eye Unsung Player. Get your picks in here, either via Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars or at Twitter. You can tweet it to me, @ColePemper, if you want to get your Scouts Eye Unsung Player pick in. on Wednesday. The Auto Spot Tire Pros at 9718 Touchton Road invite you to join them for cookies with the Jaguars rookies, noon until 2. They'll be signing autographs, sharing cookies, and giving you a chance to win an autographed football and club seats to the Monday night game against the Chargers that's coming up a week from tonight. More to come on Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio.
The latest on You Decide 20.
Toss sweep, and Foster is trying to stretch it. The Jaguars bottle it up. The ball is free on the field, and it's picked up, and it's going back the other way. This one's like a touchdown for Ashton Gaboni. It is on the fumble.
And that's the big play from Jaguars, the Jaguars defense yesterday in a 20-13 loss to the Texans. Reminder, you can win a VIP game day experience to the Jaguars-Buccaneers game on December 11th from Gate. You'll get 4 game day tickets, 4 VIP Sky Patio Lounge passes, and a limo for 4 people to and from the game. Stop by your nearby Gate gas station to register. Jaguars fans, put Gate in your tailgate. Time now for an injury update brought to you by Baptist Health, Jacksonville Circle of Care. Jaguars played without Terrence Knighton and Aaron Campman, and Brian Rubisky continues to be on the shelf. And we'll see what happens this week. I know that Campman is trying to work his way back, and I'm still waiting to hear on Knighton what his situation is going to be. And I'm curious, as I think everybody is, Gene, to see what Brian Rubisky could add to things, a guy who is has a decent pedigree as a wide receiver, and we know that's where one of the real issues has laid with his team so far this year.
Brian Rubisky, I believe, will definitely help us. I mean, obviously, it's the one position group where we've had a lot of inconsistent play, all the way to the number one thing of just catching the ball. We had 3 drops in the game yesterday. That's been a repetitive thing that certainly I've said throughout the season. It's something that does need to be fixed. It is identified. But I feel like he'll be able to come in and certainly add to what we have and hopefully improve what we have.
All right, so let's reset it. We'll continue to take your thoughts and your picks on the Scouts Eye Unsung player for the next couple of minutes as well. And we'll also take your questions and comments via Twitter. You can tweet it to me at Cole Pepper or on Facebook.com/Jacksonville Jaguars.
Only works when you turn it on, right? And, of course, our tweets and Facebook questions brought to you by our good friends at CopyFax, who are the official suppliers of our game boards to Brian and Jeff and Marco Colo, by Bali.
That's right.
Yeah, he likes those things. This is from Enrique. Why was Gabbert benched?
You know, that, of course, was that's one of the big questions coming out of this. I said last night on the air that I thought the only reason that a healthy young quarterback should be benched is if you're developing him, is because if he gets overwhelmed to the point where he can't learn, where he's just shell-shocked. There were a couple of shots, and I'm playing amateur psychologist on TV, that you looked at Gabbert, you kind of got that look in his eye a little bit. It may have been as much frustration as anything. I don't know. You have to make that call down on the field. But a young player can get to the point where they're overwhelmed and where the learning can't take place, and that would be a reason to take him out of the game.
Well, again, that's a head coach's call. On the sideline, it's a feel. When the guy's coming off, you have to be able to, you know, evaluate situations like that and make the call that you think is best for the team, best for the player, long term. There's 2 sides to that. From a scout's perspective, obviously, when you look at our playoff situation, you look at the quarterback that had got knocked around in the game. He did have 6 sacks. He was hit 11 times. So he was fighting his way through the game. I mean, there were some legitimate hits at times, and he kept getting up. And I know his teammates admire him for that. And you know, I don't know what's taking place, you know, on the sideline. I do know it was trying at times yesterday, for sure.
Is that a short-term pain, long-term gain situation? I mean, what he's going through, you don't like him to go through, but if he's going to, he can benefit from it.
He can benefit from it. So to kind of complete what I was trying to express is, do you keep him in and allow him to go through that teaching time running the two-minute offense versus the number one defense in the NFL? Or do you make the decision that we made yesterday? And I think, again, you got to go back. It's a head coach's call. You got to trust his judgment. He's on the sideline with the player. I'm certain he's talking with Dirk Cutter and Mike Shepard. But I can tell you, Blaine is a very competitive person. He wants to win. He wants to perform well. I know people want him to perform well, but things got to perform well, too, around the quarterback. And, you know, I saw some things yesterday studying the film a number of times that are certainly going to help him in the future.
Can you talk about some of those things, some observations you made that you think are beneficial?
Well, I think he showed a guy that was very gutty in spite of how things were happening out on the field. I mean, this is a good defense that we are confronted against. And I think the other thing is, you know, again, I'm a scout, so I'm watching demeanor. I'm watching between plays. I'm watching on the sideline. I got my binoculars. I'm watching in the huddle how he's conducting business with our teammates. I'm watching how his teammates are responding to him. I think there's a lot of things from an intangible aspect that you look for in an adverse game like this to see how your leader's going to respond. And I know his teammates have great belief in him. I know he has great confidence in himself. I think he's handled a lot of this adversity clearly the right way. He knows it's a team sport. And this is part of the growing process of a quarterback. In every situation, the NFL is different. And, you know, again, yesterday it was a tough loss, but there were some things he can certainly learn from after he studies the film today.
All right, so let's also talk about the big drop that everybody knows about, which was, and I think there may have been a couple of drops, but Mercedes Lewis. We know from last year he physically can do it, right? We've seen this. I think it's pretty clear that it's in his head at this point. He's, what do you call it, trying too hard or overthinking it or whatever else. There's a mental block on it. Any advice on how to handle them and how can he get over that? We've seen this with other athletes sometimes, guys who just, you know, Steve Sachs, I remember, if you're a baseball player, couldn't throw it to first base for the life of him. It just, Chuck Knoblauch had this happen to him. How do you get over it? How do you break that mental block?
I think you just keep working at your craft. You know, don't lose confidence in yourself. You know, you bring up baseball, a batting slump. I feel like, you know, the one thing he can do is catch the ball. And why he's struggling, I don't know. If I did, I would have solved it for him already. I can tell you this for Blaine, you know, if we finish that drive with a touchdown, with the way this game went, this could be looked at totally differently. Yep. Just like the week before, if we finished the last drive with a touchdown, things could be looked at very differently. We had a drop on third down by Cecil. I know it was stated, you know, he's hooked coming out of the break. It should have been flagged, but that happens all the time in the NFL. The ball was well thrown. He got two hands on the ball. The ball should have been caught on third down. That sustains the drive. The other play, Deji Karim. The one thing Blaine did very good is on our screens, he sold the screens well. And then under duress, he was able to improvise his throw and get it to our backs. He made a couple outstanding plays on the screens, which wouldn't be evident to people unless you study the film, how he got the ball off in a couple situations. But Deji drops the ball, and on film, it's well blocked. It's a chance for an explosive play. So when you look at plays in the game where to function well on offense, you got to get 11 players working together, there's a few breakdowns that certainly could go the other way in terms of being positive plays, and you could be looking at this a lot differently today. But that's the game of football, and you got to execute.
All right, so those are some of the issues that cropped up yesterday. We'll talk about a few more when we come back. But right now it is time to announce the Scout's Eye unsung player for this week. Thought this was a layup, easiest one of the year so far, I thought.
Well, I would agree with you on that, Cole. Russell Allen, he had seven tackles. He had a forced fumble. You know, he played downhill. I said that earlier, linebackers played downhill against his own blocking to where the lineman couldn't just rub off and start munching our linebackers. I thought we took it to him. We threw the first punch from the linebacker group. And Russell Allen, he was just active all day. I mean, he got an opportunity to step up like a number of other guys on defense, and he took advantage of it.
Yeah, and so, all right, we do actually have a number of people who kind of felt like I did, that was an easy one, and they've nailed that. And so we'll draw the winning name out of a hat here and decide who's our winner this week for the autograph football. Have the general manager and Russell Allen both signing an official NFL football as part of the giveaway. Also, when we come back, we're going to dip into the gene pool. We'll talk about the center position, apropos with Brad Meester setting a Jaguars record this week. And I want to get Gene's thoughts on a newly signed quarterback, a guy who came from a smaller school, but a guy I really like coming out, for what it's worth. And we'll talk about Dan LeFevre a bit here in just a bit as we continue on here. Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Fans text BBQ to 72239. Enter for a chance to win the Sunny's Game Ball Delivery Contest. You can hand the game ball to the ref at the start of the next Jaguars home game. Back with more after this timeout, right here on Jaguars Radio.
It's a 35-yard field goal. Crosswind. Scobie has missed from 55. The snap, the placement, the kick up on the way. Scobie gets it. And the Jaguars are on the board with 4:15 to play.
Another field goal for Josh Scobie, who hit a couple of, or hit that one yesterday from 35 yards out late in the ball game, and had the 21-yarder early in the ball game. So two field goals for Scobie as the Jaguars fall to the Houston Texans 20-13. Become part of the Jaguars Advantage, the new Jaguars fan loyalty program. With Jaguars Advantage, seats and ticket owners can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of their favorite online retailers. For more information, go to jaguarsadvantage.com. All right, time now to jump into the gene pool as we examine the DNA that makes up a particular position in the National Football League. And this week's position is center. And coming off Brad Meester's record-setting day, maybe the perfect time for this. In my exhaustive research, Gene, 6'3", 290 with a 5'2", 40. If there's another position that the 40 time matters less on, I don't know that I know it, but that's about what I'm looking at for a center. What do your numbers say?
Well, really, right in line with yours, Cole, 6.027, 302, 5.21. That's coming out of the combine last year, the average. And then pro starter, 6.032, 3.03, 5.26.
There are probably as many guys under 300 as over 300 now. Not really a position necessarily needs bulk. You can play that as a, I guess, a tactician, as a guy who moves better, but you got to be good between the years.
No question. You know, Brad Meester, coming out of Northern Iowa, went to the same high school as Aaron Campman and two other players in the National Football League. In recent years, they had four from the same high school. Brad was 6.035, 300. He's actually about 295 now. And like you said, he's got 162 starts. A guy who actually started his career at left guard for us. It's got to be a guy that has quick hands and quick feet, because you got to snap, and you got to be able to get your hands up quick on a tight lined defensive lineman. And Brad is, again, what you expressed, a technician, and he's a very aware player. He's really the quarterback of the offensive line. He IDs the mic. He certainly has to be someone that can shotgun snap. He's got to be someone that can move laterally to reach a shaded nose. He's got to be a guy that can work second level to cut off on-flow linebackers. He's got to be a good athlete. I mean, next to your left tackle, it's your center from an athletic ability standpoint. Now, the center can have shorter arms. You know, Brad's got over 32-inch arms, but there's some centers playing with less than 32-inch arms. And because he's going to be handling the ball with one hand, you would like to have at least a 9-inch hand, just like with all quarterbacks. He's certainly got better than a 9-inch hand. So he's got some of the specific things that you'd look for in terms of height, weight, speed, arm, hand, and certainly the mental for the position.
All right, when he was drafted out of Northern Iowa, and we'll use him as an example, how much did he have to learn going from a college offense to a to an NFL offense? Because we talked about having to have it between the ears. Northern Iowa probably didn't run exactly an NFL offense, did they?
No, but they've been a quality Division I AA program for a long time. And coming in here playing left guard, just like Will Rackley, it's easier to play than to come in and do the center position as a rookie. And I feel like Brad was a guy a lot like Will in the fact that he prepares very well. And he's done it throughout his entire career, week in and week out. He's got a way that works, and it's enabled him to sustain a long career here. This is his 12th year with the Jaguars.
And what about some other non-measurables? I remember a line from the Vince Papale movie. It was called Invincible, Unbreakable, one of those. Invincible. Yeah, Invincible, Vince Papale. And he's sitting there in training camp. Do you remember this? I don't know if you saw this movie. His roommate's the center on the team, and he says, "I don't think anybody likes me." He goes, "Do you like me?" "No, but I don't like anybody. I'm a center." I've covered three centers primarily in my career. Tim Grunhardt at Kansas City, Dave Wydell, and Meester. They all had a little bit of a surly attitude to a certain extent. Probably Brad, probably the least of the three. Wydell, boy, when he was between the lines, he could be a surly guy. And off the field, he's very jovial. But is there a certain – is that type of an attitude essential for a center?
Well – Brad Meester is someone that is the technician. He's someone that has a different personality. I don't know the Wydell brothers, but I know Dave was a guy that was more end result. Mm-hmm. Wasn't the technician, but end result. And Dave certainly had a different personality on the field now.
Oh, yeah.
So Brad might be a little bit more respectful on the field than maybe what Dave was, but they both were very good players. And Dave was a little atypical because he was 6'7".
Yep.
You don't see 6'7" centers.
He played some tackle, played some guard.
That's
some
right. Yeah. And so Brad really has the right size for a center. He's not too tall to where leverage is ever going to be an issue. And I just stated earlier the college and pro averages, and here's a guy that's slightly above the average, certainly can move in a short area, and, with a high football IQ. So Brad is somebody I know everyone on this team trust because they know Brad knows.
All right, so we wrap things up here on the gene pool with who is best? Who is the best center you covered, saw, scouted, what have you?
Well, I'm going to go with two Pittsburgh Steelers. How about that?
Yeah, they've had a pretty good run there, haven't they?
I'm going to go with Mike Webster. Mm-hmm. He was 6'0", 255, but 9 Pro Bowls. And there'll be a theme with these centers when I get done. He had 150 consecutive starts, mm-hmm. 220 total. And everyone knows he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. But then the other one that I think one day will be in the Hall of Fame is Dermoni Dawson. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy, 6'0", 292, 7 Pro Bowls, and he started 144 games and played in 184. When you see a lot of the centers that certainly have built a reputation in this league, they have built it based on durability and reliability. So.
All right, so that's those two centers. You've often talked about availability being a very important ability, and there's a great example of it. All right, that's the gene pool for this week as we took a look at the center position. Quickly, before we take a break here, Dan LeFevre signed him last week off the Colts practice squad. And what kind of player is he?
Well, he's just over 6'3". He's got a good build. You like to see a quarterback be well-proportioned, has some strength in their lower body, not just in their upper. He's a guy that passed for, I believe, over 12,000 yards in college, rushed for over 2,500 yards, played in 3 MAC championship games. He was MVP of 2 of them. two-time captain, a guy that, you know, can run sub 4.7. We brought him in for a workout, and about a week after we brought him in for the workout, the Colts signed him to their practice squad. So at the time, we didn't have an opportunity to add him to our roster. When we had an opportunity to do so, we did. And we're glad to have him. Feel like he's, a young, ascending quarterback that just needs some time on task in the NFL. And we feel like maybe this can be home for him, in the future. We'll see how things play out. But, you know, he's originally drafted by the Bears. And, again, he's got a good history coming out of college.
Strong arm guy or more of a spread the ball around guy? What's his?
He's got good arm strength. He's a guy, too, that played in more of a shotgun spread offense, and he was a guy that wasn't just a thrower. He could actually run for a big guy. So we have actually three quarterbacks that are mobile. All three of these guys have NFL size, got NFL arms, and are mobile in what they do.
All right, you can get your questions and comments in via Facebook.com/JacksonvilleJaguars or via Twitter. You can tweet it to me at Cole Pepper, C-O-L-E-P-E-P-P-E-R. When we come back, we'll look around the AFC South and also look ahead to the Monday night matchup against the San Diego Chargers. The Broncos beat the Chargers yesterday, and we'll talk about what the Jaguars can do against that San Diego team, and Gene will give you the key matchup to watch for that game on Monday Night Football. Back with more Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith right after this timeout here on Jaguars Radio. We welcome you back, Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith, as we continue on following the Jaguars 20-13 loss to the Houston Texans. Look around the AFC South. The Texans now after the win, now 8-3 on the season. Titans got a win, beating Tampa Bay 23-17. I'm going to start calling the Buccaneers team split personality. There are days they show up and look very good. Yesterday, Chris Johnson suddenly looked like the Chris Johnson from last year, running for 190 yards. Jaguars at 3-8. The Colts losing to Carolina 27-19. I watched a little bit of that game, by the way, Gene, keeping an eye on it and in between during our game. It doesn't look like the players aren't laying down. I mean, they're out there trying. Reggie Wayne makes a long catch and run on a touchdown. Guys are out there. But, boy, they just do not have – they're not getting it done right now, and Carolina got the victory. But I'll tip my cap to the Colts players. They look like they're playing hard.
Yeah, Jim Caldwell, number one, is a good person. I've known him for a long time. I think the players are playing hard for him. And sometimes it seems like – you can't make a break, and you know there's trying things that you got to fight through. Now they did so a year ago. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had some injuries and they had some games that certainly didn't play out the way they had in prior years. But they found a way to win for the most part, and so I think last year probably going through that helped them this year. But it's just been a lot more of a struggle for a lot of different reasons.
Tonight in the National Football League, the Giants take on the New Orleans Saints. So if you want to keep an eye on sidelines, there are some Jaguars connections there. Of course, Tom Coughlin with the Giants, Greg Williams, the defensive coordinator of the New Orleans Saints, and the Jaguars have played New Orleans earlier this year, so we'll have a chance to keep an eye on those two teams. And you look around the NFL as a general rule this year. Yeah, you've got the undefeated Packers, who look like the class of the league. But even the teams that are, you would say, 2, 3, 4 kind of teams in the power rankings. There's not a lot of separation between maybe some of those teams 2, 3, 4 and maybe team 7, 8, 9. There's some real parity this year. Aside from having a team that's undefeated and a team that's winless, you start to bunch to the middle. There's not a lot of difference between some of these teams.
No question, and that's why it's about your team. And what I mean by that is, yeah, health plays into this, but if you don't beat yourself now, you got a chance to win a lot of games in this league. I mean, if you're average at anything, with the competitive balance we got in the NFL, it gets exposed. And, we just have to function at a higher level execution-wise. And clearly there's some things that can be coached and corrected, as I like to say, that will enable us to be better. And, you know, the players are still working to improve, and that's the key here, because as you continue to improve, it eventually means you're going to start winning games.
All right, and breaking news here this hour out of Houston, Matt Leinart, it has been confirmed, will miss the rest of the season. He was tackled as he got rid of the football. I think it was Jeremy on the play Jeremy Mincy made on him, and went down and broken collarbone. So he's done for the year. So the Texans now down to T.J. Yates and Kellen Clemens at quarterback. And I don't want to bring up the guy who was brought up in this article here, but a certain former Packer and Viking is being talked about a little bit. But the Houston Texans now are, you would think, would have to be looking around trying to find some quarterback help here to make sure they have that position shored up if they're going to make a run to the playoffs.
Well, I think, you know, from their perspective, you know, they got a couple guys there that they may try to work with. It's not like there's a lot of players that are available at this point. You're past the trade deadline. So they got to lean on the running game, lean on their defense, and try to win games the best way they know how with the players they have. And it'll be interesting to see what they're able to do down the stretch.
All right, let's look forward to the key matchup. We won't be on next week. You'll be heard with Brian Sexton, part of our pregame show. But key matchups against San Diego. The Chargers come in. They've had a tough run of it, too. A couple of teams who really need to win right now.
No question. You know, you look at San Diego, and certainly Phillip Rivers has not had the season that I or he would have expected, more interceptions than you would expect. But they are playing hard. You know, when you look at their offensive skill set, you know, their running backs are catching the ball well in the backfield. Antonio Gates is healthy as of late. And, you know, Vincent Jackson is a big part of their offense. So when you look at their football team, their offensive skill set certainly is going to challenge our defensive skill set. And by that, I mean their wide receiver, tight end, running backs against our corner, safety, and linebacker group.
And speaking of Vincent Jackson, he's averaging almost 19 yards a catch this year. He always seems to be one of those guys who makes a lot of plays down the field. He's tall. He can run. And that'll be an interesting 7 touchdowns this year so far for Jackson, 44 catches, 825 yards. So he's been the big play receiver for the Chargers this year. And another chance for whether it's Ashton Yabody or Will Middleton to match up against a guy who can really be a deep threat. And with Rivers throwing the football, maybe more of a deep threat than it was with the Texans yesterday, because it didn't look like they were going to try to go deep at all with Leinart's arm, and then with the young guy Yates, not as much press down the field in the passing game as we might see on Monday night.
I agree with that, Cole. So I know our defensive staff will try to play the strength of our players. I think that's the key, trying to set them up for success. And I know our guys will go out there and lay it on the line.
All right, so that's how it looks for next week. It'll be a Monday night game, Jaguars' second primetime game. And that Monday night game here at Everbank Field, Jaguars will take on the San Diego Chargers. All right, still to come this week, tomorrow night at 6, it's the Jack Del Rio Show. Brian Sexton will have the head coach in. Then on Wednesday night, Brian joined by both Jeff Loggeman and John Osher. Baselli coming by this week? Do we know? Is he going to make an appearance?
You know what? Everybody's here but Brian.
Oh, is that right?
Brian's off Wednesday.
So everybody else gets to come in and enjoy things on Wednesday. Jaguars this week presented by Aetna. Gene, thanks a lot. I know it's been a tough week here, but thanks for popping in here on the show.
Well, it's an honor to be here, Cole, with you and Joe, and for all the listeners out there. Again, I appreciate your support.
For Joe Fortunato, for the general manager, Gene Smith, Cole Pepper saying, thanks for listening to Jaguars Monday with Gene Smith. Have a great week, and good night from Jaguar Central.